Sometimes you feel so alone and overwhelmed, you don't know where to turn. These days, it seems like there is no end to our problems. We invite you to connect with Silent Unity, the 24-hour prayer ministry, where someone is waiting to pray with you right now. Since 1890, Silent Unity has always been there. No judgment or dogma, just someone affirming the best for you. Call 816-969-2000 today. You can also connect online at unityprayervigil.org.
You're listening to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions, with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here's your host, Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. Yes, I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from Unity Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. It's a beautiful April day. Today I have the distinct pleasure and opportunity to interview noted futurist, evolutionary thought leader, social innovator and public speaker Barbara Marx-Hubbard. She's the author of several books, including Emergence and Birth 2012 and Beyond. And today we're going to look at the revised edition of Barbara's seminal book, Conscious Evolution, Awakening the Power of Our Social Potential. It's a wonderful book. There's so much packed into it. We could talk for hours, I'm sure, but there's some wonderful things, and we'll unpack some of them now. So it's a joy to welcome Barbara to today's show. Welcome. Glad you're with us.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thanks for taking the time to be here on World Spirituality. You know, we teach in Unity, I'm sure you're well aware, that there is a wisdom within everything, and that we could be co-creators of our reality. And these are the very things that you're talking about in your book. I just did a class last night on a Marcus Borg book, who talks about Jesus as Sophia, Jesus, or the Christ as wisdom itself, which was there at the beginning of creation. And it's that intuitive knowing, that evolutionary wisdom that informs everything. And this is right. A beautiful, beautiful thought, isn't it?
Well, it's a very beautiful thought. And what I'm adding to it is the evolutionary perspective on that thought, that the origin of creation from the first 3 seconds for billions of years has been guided by that process of creation that is now becoming self-aware in each of us as unique selves. Something new is happening because evolution is becoming conscious in us.
Right. And consciousness itself, of course, is always present within everything, right? But we do have this almost magical ability now to be self-reflective and self-aware, and to do it not just as individuals, but as a society or as a global brain almost, right? And this is where we have your social potential idea rather than just the human potential movement. This is the social potential movement.
Right. You know, in the human potential movement, starting with Abraham Maslow and others, they tracked wellness and human greatness and how do you get to be a highly productive, joyful, benign person rather than a sick person. And right. One of Maslow's biggest discoveries was that every well person has at least one thing in common: chosen work they find intrinsically self-rewarding and of service. In other words, finding your soul's purpose, why you were born on this earth. And when you do it, you can tell if it's it, because it's self-rewarding in the doing of it. And that's true of being a mother, an artist, a futurist, anything, a communicator. As long as you're being rewarded, that means you're fulfilling your soul purpose. And the deeper sense is the divine purpose within you.
You know, when you can do that, it seems, when you find that that meaningfulness, that choice to find what is of value to you, you can go up against huge forces. You know, you spend time in your book talking about the memes that took over Nazi Germany, and this idea of a very destructive, cruel, despotic way of looking at life. And yet I'm thinking of Viktor Frankl in the concentration camps. You know, even though he was subject to that hateful system, he found meaning in a crust of bread, in an act of kindness, and survived the terrible, Holocaust as a result. And I think that's the power of this, isn't it? We can overcome. And you talk about also what happened at the end of apartheid in South Africa. And I think it's the same idea. Who would have thought that, you know, just a few individuals thinking a different thought, making a different choice could have such a transformative effect. And yet they did.
That's true. And with Viktor Frankl, I think in the concentration camps, they found that people with some faith in greater meaning were able to survive. And if you didn't have that faith, it was very hard to survive the cruelty and the horror of it. And I think what's true on Earth today is there's a lot of pain, a lot of fear, and for very good reasons in many cases. But in order to not only survive it, but to thrive within it towards higher purpose, you have to feel there's some deeper impulse within you, not just your own superficial life purpose, but you might say a divine process of creation that incarnates in each person as their own impulse.
You know, when I was a little boy, I wrote I think it was my first article I wrote for the school magazine, and I remember the title. It was At One with Nature, and I'd always been a nature boy. I'd loved trees and the hiking and those sort of things, messing about in water, etc. And I wrote this article about how we were one with nature. Of course, I didn't realize at the time that was me being a nature mystic, not understanding what that meant, but. But this idea that I felt a great sense of meaning in that connection I had with the natural order of things. And now I understand, I was connecting in with something so much larger than my small humanness. I was connecting in with my large self, which is the universe, right?
Yes, indeed. And it's so interesting that the universe produces uniqueness in all of its members. I mean, from the little snowflakes all the way on up to you and me, it's unique. And when we join, however, our uniqueness, then we get a new whole system. Like, you're made up of 50 trillion cells. Now, that's a miracle. They're coordinated and working as you without you doing a thing about it. So the idea is nature has been creating ever more complex systems through attraction, to bringing separate parts together, and that's what we're about to do on this earth, I think.
And of course, you reference Teilhard de Chardin and Rupert Sheldrake and thought leaders like that who have brought some of these ideas to common awareness, the new sphere, and the idea of morphic resonance, that there is a sort of a nested hierarchy of, like you say, ever more fascinating connections between things, and then that we are a part of that. The collective unconscious, I guess, is another way of looking at it as well, if you're looking at it from a Jungian psychological perspective. But it's like a matrix that's a web of life, right? I think the Buddhists and the Hindus understood this too, that everything is connected in that sense.
Well, what you were saying earlier, that the thinking layer of Earth, the global brain, the noosphere, is a new component of that, because that you and I are right now in the noosphere doing this conversation, and if you have in your cell phone, in the palm of your hand, the wisdom of the entire world available to you at a click, I mean, really, with Google, and you have over 7 billion cell phones, what's happening is the planet itself is integrating into a new whole system. And while we're breaking up into parts that really are top-down structures, underneath that there is a vast, rapid connectivity of that which is created.
There seems to be there's two parts of this, isn't there? There's the and you reference it also. You talk about the technological aspect of this, and then You talk about the mystical aspect. So, you know, in the technological aspect, we have this matrix of the internet or whatever, the cyber world that's linking everything together. But then at another level, we have the spiritual connectedness, which is not dependent on machinery, right? So, and my question is, you know, how did sometimes these seem to be mutually distinct, you know, that, we can have finer and finer biotechnology or whatever, you know, and I can see that happening where our cell phones become integrated into our biological systems eventually, you know.
Yeah.
But that's still different, isn't it, from this idea of, like the Taoist says, without leaving your house, you can know the whole world, you know, that we have this ability also to travel and to know, you know, on a spiritual level. So how do those work together?
Well, I like Sri Aurobindo's description. He has two words here. There's God the Eternal and God the Consciousness Force. God the Eternal is one whole, complete, changeless, out of which everything is arising. But when it starts arising, it's genius level, like quarks, electrons, protons, allurement, creating more complex systems. So the consciousness force is like an implicate order that is activating life itself toward greater conscious life. And we, I think, have both in us. We have the inner drive towards more conscious life. We have the eternal Godhead, which could be that oneness, that wholeness, already there-ness.
Right.
But out of the already there-ness is continually arising more-ness, creativity. And so I think that an evolutionary consciousness and an evolutionary spirituality includes the eternal, the embodiment of the story in each one of us, cells, molecules. We're made up of the story. And then the next one is emergent, is that we're always emerging toward more.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, it reminds me, it also in the Hindu system, you know, Purusha and Prakriti. The Purusha is the eternal God you're talking about, and then Prakriti is the sort of the feminine side of it, is the energy of God, the Shakti of God, that is the endlessly unfolding and endlessly creative. And you need the two playing together. It's almost like yin and yang, you know, otherwise you have this cosmic nothingness or emptiness, which is fine. But once God decides to create, then you have these two polarities dancing with each other, if you like, and that's a beautiful thing. It's a spiral, as you talk about, the evolutionary spiral, or the wheel of co-creation. So talk about those concepts.
Well, the wheel of co-creation is a symbol of our turn on the spiral. If you can imagine the evolutionary spiral, the universe, earth, life, animal life, human life, all of those, it like turns on the spiral. So now make a big turn and put a wheel in it. And every sector of the wheel is a basic social function: health, education, economics, communication. And in every sector of the wheel, things are breaking down in every system and things are breaking through. Think solutions are arising. So the key evolutionary act in the wheel is to identify what's emergent, what's creative, what's new, and start placing them in every sector and then connecting the sectors to get the picture of the emerging world. When you do that, you get a gestalt. You get a pattern of the whole. It's not just separate innovations scattered. It's innovations connecting, and when they connect, you have a new whole system. That's really the excitement of the wheel.
Yeah, very, very, very beautiful concept, isn't that beautiful idea? And I think we don't have to fear the breaking down. You know, that's another thing the Hindus are good at is destruction. You know, they have the god of destruction, which is really the god of transformation, isn't it? That we fear it in the West. I think, you know, it's all got to be constantly improving and getting better and more positivity. But I think we need the breaking down and so that new things can come forth. I mean, this is part of death is part of life, isn't it? Part of birth is death, and so we don't need to fear it. It's important, and I think you say that crises of all kinds sort of precede breakthroughs and awakenings. So it's the same concept that we, you know, we're pushing through. I know Andrew Harvey talks about this, that we have to have the devastation in order to have the new birth.
Well, it seems to be so. And a lesson of evolution is crisis precedes transformation, and problems are evolutionary drivers. The same is true in your life personally, and it's socially, and even in terms of a global culture. Our problem, we have a real crisis here in global warming especially. Mm-hmm. Well, that crisis is going to evolve the species or not. And if it doesn't, we're going to devolve rapidly because the crisis is serious. Means, I think, that we're waking up that we have to be causal. We have to be consciously evolving. And that's what my book is about, conscious evolution.
You know, it's disheartening sometimes when you look at the political situation, for instance, in the States right now, and some of the voices of, you know, certain parties, the way they speak about global warming and evolution, and you know, they're in total denial of it, and even in denial, I understand today, you know, by one candidate of equality in terms of pay for gender equality, and I liken it to a communist plot or something. I think I read, and you know, it's like I my mind boggles that we can actually be in a society that has, you know, those that's taken seriously. Let's put it like that.
Well, you know, Teilhard de Chardin said there are two types of humans. One he called Homo progressivus, attracted to the future as an organism progressing toward the unknown. That would be me. Now, the other type is a bourgeois, who wants to keep things the way they are or the way they were. And the bourgeois, he said, are going to get more and more under pressure because you can't do it. You can want to. So the people who somehow find their security in the way things were, which probably wasn't very secure in the first place, but who would go back to the, you know, the difference between men and women and masculine superiority and the dominance of certain cultures over others, those people wanting that level of security will fail.
Yes.
Because there's an innate tendency for the system to become more connected and more emergent and more chaotic for a while.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because, you know, it can be disheartening sometimes. But so D.H. Lawrence was right, wasn't he, when he said how beastly the bourgeois is, especially the male of the species.
The poor old bourgeois, you know.
Yeah, he really didn't like bourgeois, old D.H. Lawrence, you know. But he was in touch with these fires and these energies that, you know, you're referring to, I think. He yearned for that, you know, to get back to that sense of the visceral, and I think this is a huge part of this. This is not an intellectual game, is it? We're actually involved in the incredible energies and power of the universe here unfolding, and that's exciting.
Well, don't you? I like the word eros, and at the core of evolution itself is eros, love, juicy love, putting it always together, separate parts together, allurement to create more life, more consciousness, more freedom. And what's happening in humans now is that eros is becoming empathy. More and more of us are feeling with nature, with animals, with one another, with the suffering in different parts of the world. You know, there's always been terrible suffering and starvation, and we didn't know it, though. Across the next hill, we didn't know it. Now we know it all.
Yes.
And wherever it's painful, we know it. And the next phase is wherever it's breaking through, now we have to know that. Because it's not enough to know what's breaking down.
You know, I think the one of the greatest problems is we commodify everything, don't we? We take a good idea and we turn it into a commodity. It may be a good idea to begin with, and I think this happens to spiritual movements too. You know, they're wonderful at the beginning, but then they become commodified into ritual and the way it has to be. And what you're speaking of, you know, is endlessly creative. It can't be pinned down. And I think that's the idea of the circle again, the spiral. You know, these are organic structures, aren't they? They unfold. They're very linked with animistic theologies, Native American, for instance, you know, which has the circle and the spiral as part of their dynamic there. And, I think the old paradigms are certainly mechanistic and rigidly angled, I think. And I love the idea that there's no harsh angles to this way of looking at things, is there?
No, that's very, very true. It's not square. it's angled and it's emergent and it's fluid. But what I think is so exciting about it is that it has a direction toward greater consciousness, toward more conscious life for billions of years. So you might say there's a big controversy in science about whether evolution is purposeless and mindless and simply accidental shifts and changes for reproductive success. Now that is an extremely limited view of the mystery story of evolution toward higher consciousness, greater freedom, and more complex order. So I think not only is there a difference between Homo progressivus and the bourgeois, but between those attuned to a impulse of creation that has meaning and direction and those who are not attuned to it.
You know, it's ironic how God works, though. God can work through anything and everything, right? It's ironic to me that, the word meme and everything that we've come to use now more and more, you know, originated in the thoughts of Richard Dawkins, you know, who's, one of the more famous new atheists. And, he's speaking to an idea that is quite godlike in that way, isn't it? That interconnectedness. So again, I find that sort of amusing in a way.
I think Michael Dowd has a very good take on it. He speaks of evidential reality and God as creativity. And the evidential reality of the creativity of God, just looking at the universe and looking what's around us, and then how to co-evolve, co-create with it, has always made a lot of sense to me. And Michael has been able to get a lot of approval from Richard Dawkins and other of these atheists. And often what they're atheistic about is old-fashioned views of God.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, because you have to admit that some of the views of God, that so-called religious views, would be something that many of us would totally discard. And so, you know, I think also there's just a difference in sensitivity. I think some people, there's no doubt, like you have an athletic capability or a mathematical capability. There is a spiritual sensitivity capability. And I'm always amazed that people can look at this magnificent story of creation and see it as purposeless, mindless, meaningless, and based on physical laws. So I've come up with a theory that these people have slightly different genes, or they're missing a part of the genetic code, like the colorblind. People are colorblind; they don't see color. Well, some people are spiritual; spiritually inert. They don't see it. They don't feel it. They don't know it. And maybe they have another function altogether.
Right, and that's a good way of putting it. They have another function, you know, because I'm certainly not athletic myself, but I certainly admire those people that are, you know, and they have that capability to move their bodies in ways that I could never even conceive of. And so it's plausible, isn't it, that, the same could be true of a spiritual awareness. Because some people
and they look at things
again,
and
they just see a clod of earth. Other people see the glory of God in it, you know, so... Yeah.
But, you know, I think the ones who are nourished by an internal spiritual impulse, not only in the world but inside themselves, are such a blessed type because you're nourished all the time by it.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
Without it, I would my life would certainly not have the same meaning.
Well, and you call them golden innovators too, these folks that are, you know, pushing the envelope here and on all the areas of endeavor. Could be spiritual, could it be other fields. And I love that idea. I like to call them a cloud of witnesses, which is, from St. Paul. But the folks that are there as our mentors or our encouragers, you know, they encourage us into this. And we've all had them in our lives, haven't we? These people that help push us beyond the the conventional, you know, and to break through into a new understanding. So,
One thing, we're
going to close this section in a few minutes, but one thing I really loved in the book was your quote that you say, evolution creates beauty and only beauty endures. And I think that's something you could just contemplate for a while. I think in meditation that phrase, because I think it's so beautiful because it reminds me of Keats, you know, John Keats, truth is beauty, beauty is truth. And there is something inherently wondrous about that, isn't there? That, like I say, the clod of earth can be beautiful if we see it, you know, for what it is, in truth, rather than just see it as a piece of, you know, congealed mud. So evolution creates beauty and only beauty endures. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yes, it is very interesting that in the selection process of so many billions of species extinct before we got here, whatever endures is beautiful, and at the early phase of it, it's often awkward. Let's take the early phase of a horse, an Eohippus.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's nothing like the beautiful, sleek racehorses we see, or the early humans, Homo habilis, Homo erectus. You see much less aesthetic beauty. And as the humans evolve, at the upper end of beauty, it's absolutely exquisite.
That's so fascinating. Yeah.
I've often thought that some of the things that we produce, let's say ugly technology or ugly cities or ugly architectural constructions, that if they're not beautiful, they will pass away and the beauty will endure. And that's maybe why the cathedrals and the mosques endure and are
revered,
whereas most of the modern buildings probably will not.
Well, and we want to replicate them, you know, like the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C. It's a neo-Gothic structure, but it's just glorious, isn't it? But it imitates the best of European cathedral architecture, if you like. And so we want to be in those places because they are such uplifting places to be. Talking about that, I was in the Field Museum, I think it is, in Chicago recently, and saw an early form of whale. You know, before it moved into the ocean, it was like a rodent-like creature with a long snout. And talk about ugly. Man, it was ugly. Mm-hmm. But you know, once it went into the, it decided to leave the land and go into the ocean, it created this stupendously awesome aerodynamic form, which we now think of as, you know, the whale. And, you know, that it has such grace and elegance and power. Mm-hmm. But it started off as a kind of a, you know, nobody would want to kiss it, so to speak, at the beginning. I'm with Barbara Marx Hubbard. We're talking about her excellent book, Conscious Evolution. We're paying tribute to her life's work in futurism. And we're going to take a break, listen to these messages from Unity. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Unity Online Radio brings you inspiring programs on a variety of spiritual topics. Giving to the network is now easier than ever. Simply text Unity Radio to 72727 from your smartphone. You can make a one-time or recurring donation. Your gifts help us offer enriching spiritual programs that reach listeners around the world. Text Unity Radio to 72727. Thank you for your support.
I will leave this world as it is.
The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things. as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find my God.
We now return to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach.
All right, welcome back to today's show. I'm with Barbara Marx Hubbard. We're talking about her revised edition of the seminal book, Conscious Evolution. It's just come out again, 18 or 19 years, I guess, after the original, and still remarkably important, maybe more so today, because the stakes are even higher, perhaps, than they were prior to the turn of the millennium. And a beautiful book about... the ultimate optimism of God's universe. You know, the God is unfolding always more and more beautifully and majestically, and maybe in a more complex way as we make these stepping stones through the evolutionary process, which has been going on now for what, 13.8 billion years to the last
estimate.
I love the idea that we have in us, you know, heavy elements that were created in stars, you know, 10, 12 billion years ago, and now they're in us. And for some reason, that really excites me, because it's the idea that we literally are of the universe, aren't we? In every part of ourselves, body and spirit, we're totally linked to that amazing, awesome progression.
I think you have to realize that even I mean, that in itself a marvelous thing, is that every one of us holds the whole story of creation, like the atoms in our body and the molecules and then the cells and then the reptilian brain and the mammalian brain and the early human brain, and you might say the evolutionary brain, that I think we're getting a brain aware of the process of creation that we're in, combination of science and spirituality and social transformation. Well, I feel every one of us is an embodiment of the universal story of creation. And every one of us is holding an impulse toward an emergent potential in the story of creation. It's a beautiful way to see yourself. Because I'll tell you what it does. If you have a problem, if you feel depressed, for example, and you realize, oh, evolution is depressed inside me, what wants to emerge? Well, you can be sure that something wants to emerge, that you are an expression of. It gives you faith in problems, actually. It gives you faith in depression. It gives you faith in challenges, because challenges is what creates the newness. If we didn't have that, we would be basically not evolving. So I love the view of the new story of creation with the life force of the divine impelling it from within in a system. I believe God put freedom in the system, and that the suffering, if you wanted to make a robotic universe, let's say you were God and you want to make it perfect, in order to create beings like who are godlike, let's just say that was the purpose, well, then you would create robots. But if you wanted to create a man in the image of, if you wanted to create humans in the image of a divine creator, you have to give freedom in the system so that when we became co-creators, we would be free. It would, we would be more godlike than if it was done automatically from a higher power alone.
Yes.
So I think the possibility of failure is like with any parent with a child. It's possible that any child will fail. It's possible that our species will fail. And that's a necessary reality so that we evolve or not. Because nature, God, is selecting for what says yes to potential.
I love that. There's a wonderful book by the polymath Alan Lightman called Mr. G, and it's a sort of a fable, if you like, about what you're just talking about, the creation of endless universes by God, and how, you know, some just don't get it together and they fade away, and others come forth into magnificence, and we're in one such magnificent universe where everything seems to be unfolding, you know, in a way that God could never have imagined, almost. It's like we're taking God for a ride, you know, on a roller coaster that, you know, God couldn't really conceive of at the beginning, but it's all part of the plan. It's this old question, though, about free will and predestination. In which one? And the answer is yes. You know, they're probably both, aren't they? There is a sense of we're in a matrix where everything is planned. And yet our movement through the matrix is unique, is every moment is a free will step, you know, and we get to choose.
We do. So that's why I call conscious evolution, evolution by choice, not chance.
Yes.
That is the, I think, will in retrospect be as great an advance as self-reflective consciousness was 50,000 years ago. I mean, it was amazing to have a self in the midst of the Neanderthal world. So now it's amazing to have an evolutionary consciousness that is cooperating with the process of creation in the midst of a self-conscious world. It's an emerging human here.
Now, some people are going to say, okay, this sounds like the Borg, you know, we're going to be assimilated, you know, that we can't avoid this. We're going to be taken into this larger being or whatever it is. And, you know, we've seen movies like The Matrix where, we're being manipulated by a larger and larger machine rather than it being free will. We're fooled into thinking that we have free will. How do you respond to those people that say, oh, this is scary because I'm part of this larger thing. I'm losing my own identity here.
Well, you know, you're gaining a vast identity because you've been given a free choice in the evolution of your culture and your world. Now, my gosh, if you want to be free, it's not so easy, but you are free. We all are free, and that's the scary part. The scary part is freedom. I mean, if it were all pre-planned and no choices, then you wouldn't be free. So yes. Freedom means freedom to choose and also challenges. Otherwise, there'd be no freedom. So I think it's a misbegotten view.
Right.
And I just think it's inaccurate at all, altogether.
Yeah. Yeah, and I know, you know, some people fear, you know, becoming sort of a bionic person or whatever, fear the idea of cloning and, you know what's going to happen to human beings. I know a lot of people feel that. I read an article recently that AI, artificial intelligence, was eventually going to destroy human beings because we couldn't keep up with the artificial intelligence, so we were a hindrance to them, and they had to get rid of us. And fear these things. You know,
a lot of people do a lot of things, but here is a way.
True.
The way to look at it is that evolution creates radical newness, as from single cell to animal to human to us. And if you think that this is the absolute end of evolution, is you and me, the little furry biped with an internal consciousness, do you think this is the end and nothing more is coming? Of course not. So what is coming is we are creating. Here, I'll take a jump, and they'll really be scared of this one. I think this is really going to upset a lot of people. I think what's happening is we are being given the capacity, first of all, to restore the earth, to free ourselves from the deficiencies of hunger and much of disease and war, and that we're just at the threshold of exploring the vast dimensions of inner space and the universe beyond this planet. We've got a universe of billions of planets around us, and eventually I think we'll become a galactic species, and that some of the high technology, including artificial intelligence, robotics, and other such really nanotechnology, will have some purpose on Earth. It is dangerous if it's misused on Earth, and it could well be that it's for our next stage of evolution when we have to go into the universe beyond the planet.
Yeah, I like that idea.
This is not the end, and Earth is giving birth. Mother Earth has given birth for 4.5 billion years. You know, she was a rock.
Right.
You have to try to remember, Mother Earth was a rock. Now, that's a lot to say that we got to be a rock. But she could have been, I'm a rock, that's it. No. Up come bacteria. Now, bacteria are amazing little geniuses. Elizabeth Sartoris is always talking about them doing genetic DNA and exchanging codes, and they populated the rock. And the rock created the DNA and the life and all these different life forms. And then there was no biosphere, none. If you landed here, you would have had to wear a spacesuit. So how did that chlorophyll molecule, photosynthesis, enormous mutations? Good God. If you were alive in the early seas of Earth, you would have said, I think it's all over because we're running out of energy. And then in came chlorophyll and solar energy and so on. So now the people are saying, oh, my God, we're never going to make it. And we might change, and we want to be just exactly like we are, which is kind of halfway miserable most of the time. No.
Yeah.
You know, really, folks, let's open our evolutionary eyes, folks.
Yeah, agreed. And that is a lovely idea, because you mentioned that in the book, you know, a rock, inconceivable a rock would get up and start and move towards the moon, you know, but now we've developed so much we can actually do that, so, you know, nothing is impossible.
It's fabulous. And see, if you're a homo progressivist, you're attracted to it. If you're trying to return to a past state or go backwards, you're going to be under increased stress. So my word to any bourgeois that might be listening, probably there are very few.
Yeah, really.
Is to turn around, open your eyes, and see what's inside you to create that excites you. Where is your life purpose? And I would ask all bourgeois to turn around now and look to the future.
Right. And, you know, as we say in Unity, all parts of everybody are in us, too. So, you know, we have
the bourgeois
element, don't we, to us, that is fear-based and doesn't like change. But we also have that, you know, innovative person within us that says, why not, you know. So there's a great story, actually, a short story by E.M. Forster, the famous writer, you know, Passing to India or whatever, but he wrote a science fiction story about, it's called The Machine Stops, and humanity had gone down underground and lived in a special environment where the machine looked after everything, and eventually the machine stopped, and most people were dying, and they couldn't leave because their legs had all atrophied, etc. But one person decides to climb up through the tower there, you know, underground, whatever, up to the top. And the end of the story is he looks out on this amazing landscape. And he's that innovator, isn't he? He's the one that's pushing forward, you know. It doesn't matter that he was controlled by the machine, you know, that had forgotten his destiny. In that moment, he remembered and started a new generation up there, you know. It's like an Edenic state again, you know, the beginning again. I always love that story because it's never over. In other words, there's the death of one, you know, but here's the new. Yeah,
you can be sure of that. And the coming phase of evolution always looks like magic to the existing phase, or looks frightening, you know. Imagine how for an early human, how would our airplanes and our smartphones and Los Angeles look. What would they think?
Well, we probably couldn't even see them, actually, I think, you know.
No.
Now, they say you know, the people that couldn't, there were people who couldn't see the ships when they came from Spain, you know, the natives were unaware. They had no reference point for them, so they didn't exist to them. And I think there's something to that too, isn't there? That it's so far beyond our expectations, these things, that we don't even acknowledge that they're there. And of course, the spiritual path itself, I think, is an open secret. You know, it's not there until you wake up to it. It's as if it's invisible. Yeah.
And it's true, like any great gift, if you were, like for me, mathematics and equations and the understanding of the amazing reality of what the mathematicians and scientists are able to fathom is awesome.
Yes.
And so the fact that I can't do it doesn't mean I can't appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Of the great, the different gifts that people have, the athletic gift, you know, it's amazing. So we should be appreciative of all these different gifts. And the fact that we might be able to consciously enhance ourselves is very interesting, because humans have been, I mean, evolution has been selecting genetically for billions of years. And many, many, many failures, you know, more failures than not, billions of species didn't quite make it and didn't survive. So nature is always doing genetic engineering and not always doing it right. Because what's right? It's an experiment.
Right.
So we're going to do genetic engineering. We're going to do that. We're going to enhance our intelligence. We're going to enhance our athletic ability. We're going to enhance different things. We're going to make mistakes. But you're not going to stop that by saying, this is the perfect state we're all at now, folks. Let's not change anything. Well, you know, that's hopeless.
Right.
That is actually hopeless. I mean, if that's what you're really trying to do, you're going to be under stress for your whole life.
Well, it's the same idea that, you know, we had these great breakthrough moments about 500, 600 BC, where you had, you know, Taoism and Buddhism and the, you know, some of the great scriptures of Hinduism and then the later religions, you know, and that's the only time that we had these breakthroughs, you know, and we've got it codified in these holy books. That's insane, isn't it? They're wonderful books, but they can't be the be-all and end-all of our spiritual endeavor. We have to move on from that, you know, we have to see them as wonderful, but not the only ones. And it's the same idea. If we're stuck in saying, well, the Bible has the very last word on everything,
that's an insane
way of looking at things.
Well, I think that all the religions were given birth by great mystics and saints.
Absolutely.
But almost nobody could do it. You know, people had to deify Jesus as the only Son of God because he was so uniquely wonderful.
Yes.
Even though he said, you will do the works that I do, and greater works than these will you do. Well, one thing about unity, that's what unity believes. And unity is, by the way, a very radical religion.
It is.
Because it actually says we will be doing those things.
Yeah.
So, you know, I wouldn't... I mean, I think unity, when unity comes out of the closet the whole way, it's pretty avant-garde revolutionary, if I may say so.
Absolutely, yeah. And obviously very much in line with your teaching and your life's work, you know, which is a wonderful thing. We are out of time. Let me tell you about next week, and then I want to say goodbye to Barbara. Next week, internationally recognized shamanic healer and teacher Itzhak Beery joins me. He's going to talk about his new book. It's The Gift of Shamanism, Visionary Power, Ayahuasca Dreams, and Journeys to Other Realms. So it's kind of, that'll be interesting, and it'll tag in nicely with some of our thinking today. But I have really enjoyed talking with Barbara Marx-Hubbard. Thank you so much, Barbara, for being on the show with us.
Well, I enjoyed it very much, and thank you very much, too. And people can reach me on evolve.org if they wish to find out anything more about my work.
Yeah, and I encourage you to do so, because you're not going to be disappointed. It's very exciting stuff. So thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you next week. All right, take care now.
Okay, very good. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
All right, thanks, Barbara. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world. and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on Unity FM, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org. Things may happen around you, things may happen to you, but the only things that really count are the things that happen in you.
This meditative moment from Reverend Eric Butterworth is brought to you by Unity.
Notice that there might be something not quite right, but you just can't put your finger on it? We may describe it as an inner stirring, a restlessness, a yearning to find our way home to our heart and higher purpose. Some of us may feel like we are living on borrowed time, that despite our accomplishments, what was once so important to us now just feels empty and meaningless. If you find your heart longing, wanting, looking for a path home to authenticity and purpose, join us for transformation, inspiration, hope, and possibility. Move toward your higher calling. Listen to The Call of Spirit with Evelyn Foreman and tune in to Possibility every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Central Time here on Unity Online Radio. Culture is defined by the Oxford Dictionary as modern popular culture transmitted via mass media and aimed particularly at younger people. But can it be meaningful? Spiritual even? The hosts of Pop Conscious think it can be and that it can be fun to explore too. Melena Don and Stacey Macris Ross will be your amateur cultural anthropologists examining pop culture and spirituality every Monday at 2 p.m. Central on Pop Conscious on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world. Within you is a divine spark. As you feed your mind, body, and spirit with inspiration, the spark becomes a flame. Unity Online Radio provides the fuel to ignite your passion, creativity, and more during our special Ignite Your Life series. Tune into the series at unityonlineradio.org/ignite. Connect with your source and ignite your life. That's unityonlineradio.org/ignite.
You've seen reality TV. Well, now get ready for reality radio. It's raw, unpredictable, and completely unscripted. Healing Your Life with Dr. Chris Michaels follows the lives of four people each season as they face their fears and overcome challenges. Listen in weekly and follow along as they take each faithful step on their journey. Learn what it takes to really heal your life. Dr. Chris Michaels shows you how to expect specific and measurable results from prayer. He says, we must place a demand upon consciousness. We don't hope to get what we pray for. We expect it. As a 25-year veteran in the New Thought movement, Dr. Chris has helped thousands of people find their way to success and healing. His faith is unshakable, and his commitment to helping others heal through the power of prayer is extraordinary. don't miss Reality Radio, Healing Your Life with Dr. Chris Michaels, live Mondays at 11 a.m. Central Time on Unity Online Radio.
Things may happen around you, things may happen to you, but the only things that really count are the things that happen in you.
This meditative moment from Reverend Eric Butterworth is brought to you by Unity.
Notice that there might be something not quite right, but you just can't put your finger on it? We may describe it as an inner stirring, a restlessness, a yearning to find our way home to our heart and higher purpose. Some of us may feel like we are living on borrowed time, that despite our accomplishments, what was once so important to us now just feels empty and meaningless. If you find your heart longing, wanting, looking for a path home to authenticity and purpose, join us for transformation, inspiration, hope, and possibility. Move toward your higher calling. Listen to The Call of Spirit with Evelyn Foreman and tune in to Possibility every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Central Time here on Unity Online Radio. Culture is defined by the Oxford Dictionary as modern popular culture transmitted via mass media and aimed particularly at younger people. But can it be meaningful? Spiritual even? The hosts of Pop Conscious think it can be and that it can be fun to explore too. Melena Don and Stacey Macris Ross will be your amateur cultural anthropologists examining pop culture and spirituality every Monday at 2 p.m. Central on Pop Conscious on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world. Within you is a divine spark. As you feed your mind, body, and spirit with inspiration, the spark becomes a flame. Unity Online Radio provides the fuel to ignite your passion, creativity, and more during our special Ignite Your Life series. Tune into the series at unityonlineradio.org/ignite. Connect with your source and ignite your life. That's unityonlineradio.org/ignite.
You've seen reality TV. Well, now get ready for reality radio. It's raw, unpredictable, and completely unscripted. Healing Your Life with Dr. Chris Michaels follows the lives of four people each season as they face their fears and overcome challenges. Listen in weekly and follow along as they take each faithful step on their journey. Learn what it takes to really heal your life. Dr. Chris Michaels shows you how to expect specific and measurable results from prayer. He says we must place a demand upon consciousness. We don't hope to get what we pray for. We expect it. As a 25-year veteran in the New Thought movement, Dr. Chris has helped thousands of people find their way to success and healing. His faith is unshakable, and his commitment to helping others heal through the power of prayer is extraordinary. Don't miss Reality Radio, Healing Your Life with Dr. Chris Michaels, live Mondays at 11 a.m. Central Time on Unity Online Radio.
Sometimes you feel so alone and overwhelmed, you don't know where to turn. These days, it seems like there is no end to our problems. We invite you to connect with Silent Unity, the 24-hour prayer ministry where someone is waiting to pray with you right now. Since 1890, Silent Unity has always been there. No judgment or dogma, just someone affirming the best for you. Call 816-969-2000 today. You can also connect online at unityprayervigil.org.